Welcome, and thank you for all. Thank you all for choosing to end your day with us way over here in the outer suburbs of the convention center. Appreciate you taking the time. My name is Jeremy Masner. I'm a group program manager on the engineering team for SharePoint and SharePoint Online. And my colleague,
Chris McNulty, as I like to say, recovering MVP, product manager for SharePoint and OneDrive, focusing on enterprise content management. So on behalf of all of you who made the trek out west today for this session, welcome to Alabama. And despite what Jeremy says, we're quite sure, based on the track record of social media from last night, that very few of you are actually ending your day at 5 o'clock. So we wish you well and hope to see you later on this evening at one of the many events we know that's going on here at Ignite.
And we're going to talk about ECM, which is a lot of fun because you can kind of make of it what you want. You know, is it a governance solution? Maybe. Is it a records management solution? It could be. Is it about organizing and searching? Or is it about importing images and document archives? Is it about user productivity? ECM has sort of meant all of those things to all people. And so we wanted to just step back a little bit and kind of reframe how we're thinking about it in the engineering team and across Office 365 and sort of set the stage for what we'll talk about for the rest of today in these three broad buckets. And, you know, overall, I think the message I want you to take away is that there's probably two key things. One is we want to get rid of a tension between IT governance and user productivity. I think too often we see solutions where you can very clearly tell there's someone who's a chief governance officer who says, the most important thing is that every document must be classified and that lifetime and retention must be specified in exactly this way. And you end up imposing all these rules where users either get confused by the system or they don't feel productive, or in the worst case, they simply do their work elsewhere. It's so much of a burden to comply with all these regulations that they just take their work into a completely separate system, and maybe if you're lucky, they upload the final copy into the system of record. And if you're not lucky, you never know that document existed. So first thing, we really want to get rid of that tension, and we want to try to get in an optimized place where the structure of the way people work and their natural course of productivity actually leads to the right outcomes from a governance and compliance point of view. So that as users are working, they naturally want to organize themselves anyways. If you're building a team site, if you're working with documents, it's to your advantage to actually have a well-organized collection of content, a well-organized collection of metadata, and as much as possible, we want that to be the thing that spurs all the governance and compliance. So let's get that balance right between user productivity and compliance and governance. And then let's also really focus on this notion of democratization, which is let's empower end users to build the solutions they need to be productive. We're going to talk a lot over the course of this conference about how we're moving in SharePoint much more towards a self-service model, about whether that's just creating a team site, we're bringing that back into the hands of end users in a much more direct way, whether it's things like creating views, creating columns, which have in the past in SharePoint have been a little tricky. You have to be willing to go to the site settings page. And there is clearly a cliff in usability between the people who can figure out what the site settings page does and the people who can't. I apologize for that as a longtime SharePoint team member. What we want to do is bring all those capabilities directly into the end user experience so that you don't have to worry about that cliff and falling off, and sort of bring these capabilities right as you're doing your work. We'll take a look at some of that. And so ideally, users and their teams are being productive. They're creating organization that makes sense to them, that helps the team get their job done. And all of the IT compliance, governance, records management can be built on top of that data as much as possible. So it's sort of the best of all worlds. So you see, we have the three buckets we try to divide the world into. The creation of content, we'll talk a lot about that and what we're doing in SharePoint to make it easy to get content in. To create things in the right sort of way using templates and content types. And then as teams work together, we have this idea of coordinate. So we think that's exactly that sweet spot of self-motivated organization that also helps IT. So as users start to add metadata, as they start to add processes, as they start to add flows, they start to add tags that help them get their job done, but help IT get insight into what's going on. And then on the other end of the things that have, you know, squarely been in the compliance officer's hands, so being able to enforce DLP, preventing data from leaking out where it shouldn't go, using technologies like IRM to ensure that only the right people have access to content, having access to all the auditing, e-discovery, records management capabilities there. So those are the three sort of broad buckets we'll talk about. It's how we're going to define ECM, at least for this year. Maybe we'll be back at the next Ignite with an even better definition of ECM, but this is what we're going with this year. And then the last thing just to point out is that we have a very rich partner ecosystem around not just SharePoint, but around Office 365 all up. We'll talk a little bit about some of those partners, a bunch of folks you guys are familiar with from years past, the Knowledge Lakes, the Documentums of the world. But also, we're really expanding the governance aspects of Office 365 and picking up the partner ecosystem there. So you'll see more and more guys like the Spelunks of the world who were able to get the auditing stream and actually build intelligence systems on top of that.
You know, in preparing for today's session, and we actually, despite if you were watching us in the last 24 hours, we actually began preparing for this several months ago. Actually, in many ways, we began preparing for this last year, because with all of the focus on the reinvestment and the future of SharePoint, we want SharePoint to be super awesome at the things it's always been super awesome at. One of those key workloads is content management. So this is this slide is a little bit of a word salad, but I really want to make sure these are some. We studied a lot of other industry definitions, but one of the key things that we want to talk about is we don't see enterprise content management as being a very static process that happens late in the life cycle of documents no one looks at anymore. We want to take a whole approach to the entire life cycle of a document. We really think it is probably increasingly important for us to talk about what happens in that first mile of a content's life cycle from the moment that it's born all the way on through to the content's final disposition. Third, it's important that it be people-centric. The balance and governance between productivity and management is an essential one to get right. I've been talking about this topic for a while, and I've said before, governance is the balance between runaway usage and users running away. And frequently, people are actually balanced too far on the users running away side. And that does not mean that you have a properly governed platform. It means that your information has bled out to a number of unmanaged stores, which is antithetical to the nature of content management. And finally, most importantly, if any of you were at Jeff Tepper's keynote yesterday when we talk about how SharePoint sits in the Office 365 ecosystem and consuming some of the core elements that we get from groups and from machine learning in the graph, what we have, the capabilities of governance are essential to talk about. We believe that policy and security are intrinsic to a document and should be surrounding that document with protection from the moment it's born until we don't need the document or the content in its life cycle anymore. So just a little bit of just data that we know about what content management looks like in the world today. Based on your favorite industry analyst, anywhere between $6.5 and $9 billion a year in the market. One of the bits of research that we commissioned, kind of leading into today, is from Nucleus Research, looking at the value of productivity and how much time gets wasted looking for documents in the wrong place or recreating documents that already exist and no one can surface them at the right point. And just within the United States alone, $748 billion in lost productivity for documents that people can't find, and nearly as much in documents that people can no longer put their fingers on when they need to. And we're going to talk today a lot about looking at a document lifecycle and walking it through those three buckets, but it's also important to understand, as much as we're making changes for usability, the basic platform capabilities are worth paying attention to. You can have up to 30 million items in a document library, and as we've recently announced, up to 25 terabytes in a site collection in SharePoint Online. We now support 10 gigabyte files in SharePoint, and as we announced yesterday, we have support for new previewers throughout SharePoint and OneDrive, including support for file formats like Adobe Illustrator. And finally, we've heard you that the web file system is not the traditional file system. We've been rolling out support for extended file characters throughout the year. There's two more to come between over the next couple of months. But we want to make sure whatever your files were called, wherever they started, there's a home for them inside of SharePoint and OneDrive. So we begin by looking at the process of document creation. And when we look at document ingestion, we think these are some of the major elements that we need to make sure we're focusing people's attention on. First and foremost, being able to make sure we are closely coupled to our partners across Office, making sure that inside of the Office rich clients or web clients, you have full access to be able to create and find content right there the moment that it's born. Content typing provides a powerful system of tools that help us shape the way that content is going on, And we'll talk through some of the other sharing things. But the other thing that we really want to make sure we're landing here is the ability is Office Lens. How many of you use Office Lens? Yeah, I love Office Lens. It's a fantastic tool for being able to help me capture information that lives in a whiteboard or a document. It is important to understand Office Lens participates in content management. We can begin at the moment of that photo is captured in Office Lens and cleaned up to make sure that document gets born inside OneDrive and is managed throughout its life cycle all the way on through to SharePoint and content management. So we know there are lots of other SharePoint workloads out there, but 99% of all the organizations we talk to evolve to something that looks kind of like this. And it's important that we kind of set the stage for some of these basic capabilities. People will build an intranet that is tied to a content database if you're on premises, and the content database if it's in the cloud, except you never see that. That's the magic that we have to take on. Setting up one or multiple site collections, grouped with typically one or multiple sub-sites. Inside of a site, you can have lots of elements, and we can put modern pages and wikis and framework-based web parts and all of that capability. But for most organizations, the key thing that they're focused on is the document library, something we've modernized in the last year. And at the document library level, a document library is a place where I can attach content types. We'll talk about content types shortly, but a content type is the place where I can categorize similar file content information. In the example I have on the screen here, we're saying, for example, I can create a policy inside of IT or legal or HR, but I'm not going to use a policy in sales because goodness knows it's really hard to get sales to do the same thing anytime twice in a row. But I am saying that a policy should also be able to specify things like date and topic and owner. So a content type provides a fundamental information classification that I can reuse throughout my information architecture across multiple site collections. It provides a shared set of properties, which we're going to touch on in demo here momentarily, including the ability to specify a template for the document. So ensuring that the kinds of documents that people are building begin in a governed process. Also specifying rules about metadata. And finally, I can, at content type level, if I choose to, specify rules about the information lifecycle. How long I want to keep that document at the outset, along with how long I want to dispose of that. Those are capabilities that have been around for a long time in SharePoint, and we've sustained them forward from on-premises into SharePoint Online. Closely related is the idea of a content type hub. You can implement this on-premises. This is implemented for you inside Office 365. A content type hub relies upon a specialized site collection just to act as the catch basin for content types. So I can have one master definition, and then subscribing site collections can pick up that master definition of a content type, and then I can choose to attach it to any sites or libraries where I need to push that forward. It uses a publish and synchronize model. I will anticipate the question. On-premises, they synchronize once an hour. In the cloud, they synchronize every 4 hours. But again, one version of the truth. So if you have a rule, for example, for how a contract should be governed in your organization, and you need to change that, it automatically pushes out within a couple of hours to every place that needs to consume that. So that said, let me kind of turn the mic back over to Jeremy to walk us through a demo of how we govern content creation.
Great. Well, let's start with creating some content.
Let's put you on...
Number 5, please. All right. So we're going to start by sort of the story that Chris was talking about. We're going to start by just scanning in a document I've been working on. And we'll go from there. So I'm going to go ahead and run Office Lens. And here was a cool piece of content that I saw at the conference. Let's see if I can get my angle right here.
Okay.
So this is something I really want to think about for my team. So you can see Office Lens is figured out. There's a piece of content there. I'm going to take a picture. It's processing it to get the tilt out of it and get it all straightened up. I'm going to go ahead and say done. And I'm going to put this thing into a Word file so that I can actually write some extra thoughts about it. So here it's transferring it to my OneDrive for Business. It creates its own folder in OneDrive for Business. I'm putting that content right up there. It's thinking about it. We'll wait until it processes all the way so I make sure it got up there. You can imagine once it's up there, then I can open that up in Word. I can write some comments. I can write some thoughts about it, start to flesh out my ideas. Before I leave the phone, I just want to point out something that we're talking about at Ignite as a future release for the OneDrive app, which will be Lens integration built right in. So for example, when I go over here to OneDrive, what you'll see is that in the behind the plus button, we've actually got scan down here at the bottom. So it's not entirely working in this build, which is why I didn't show it. It's coming soon, but not released yet. But that'll bring the exact same Office Lens technology directly within OneDrive. So we're pretty excited about that. Let me switch over to the PC. Can you give me a number 8 here, Chris? OK, so here we are. I don't know. Should I zoom? A little bit bigger. So here's that Office Lens folder where it puts everything that I upload. We're going to click in. And you can see I've been doing a bunch of these demos. So here's the document we were just looking at. I could open this. I could edit it. Can add content to it. And then at some point, maybe I'm ready to actually share that with my team and say, hey, this is actually something that is ready for the broader set of folks to see. So what we've added, it's rolling out now, is the ability to copy a file from your OneDrive over to a team site. So I can go over here and do copy. And it's going to bring up my little copy dialog. And it's giving me a list of the frequent sites that I've been at. I can also get to a larger list of sites if I need. But this Project Tahoe is the one we've been working on. So we'll go on over here, and we'll say we're going to stick this thing in the Documents folder. Actually, why don't we put it in Strategy Docs? And we'll go ahead and copy it. And it's just taking that file. It's copying it right over into the group site. This is a site that's attached to an Office 365 group, so it's automatically shared with all the members of that group. People will be able to collaborate on it right away. We can go over and see how that thing works. Let me switch over here. And we'll refresh. Great, so we can see that our document landed here, so it's available for the rest of the team to work on, which is excellent. I also wanted to show what it looks like starting a document from within the team site using those content types and templates that Chris talked about. And this is exactly one of those areas where IT and user productivity go hand in hand, because I will assert that most people do not want to ever start with a blank document. If you're building a company presentation, I know this happens to me all the time, I don't want a blank PowerPoint. I want the official Microsoft template. Or if I'm building an Ignite deck and I go to the Ignite team site, I want the Ignite template. I don't want to have some other template where I'm going to have to later apply things on top. If I'm writing a specification, there's a standard template for that. That's what I want to start with. So in this particular library, we've added a content type that has a document template attached to it. So when I go to the new folder, we have this cleverly named Contoso doc. And you'll see, whoops, if I can click correctly. Let's see, did I do it? I don't know what thing I actually clicked on. Hey, it did work. Great. So here's a document. You can see that I put a lot of effort into this template to make sure it complies with all corporate standards.
I think
standards.
It was a joint effort.
That's right. We spent a lot of time thinking this through, interviewing customers for typical template use cases. But you can do all the stuff you'd expect here. So I can rename this to, you know, say, critical document, because it's really important. I can go down here and put some more stuff in there.
By the way, I want to just point that out, because Jeremy showed it. I've been working around the system a long time. I did not realize until a couple days ago that you can rename a document in the Office Web Client on the fly just by clicking on it in the header bar. So it doesn't look like you can rename it, but...
Yes, it's a tricky feature. I was glad when I found that also. So what's happened here is, again, we've created a document right in the folder based on a template. So it's already given me as an end user a good head start to get the things I need. But it's also given IT a head start because they know that I'm using the right thing and it's going to have the right footers and the right, you know, legal compliance disclaimers and all those things, all of which were further on in the template. That's why you didn't see them. But we built them all out. Absolutely. And then because it's tied to one of these content types with metadata, all the documents I create through that template are going to have this extra property here called clothing. So here's one that I already was working on. We're going to bring up the property pane here so you can see. We get our nice little preview. And you can see that its content type is Contoso Doc. And because of that, it knows that an important piece of metadata to have here is this notion of clothing, so that we can sort of specify which part of our clothing line it belongs to. And this is one of those cases where we're using that managed metadata service. So we have a thing here, department, which is just an open string. You can type in whatever you want, the food department, because that's something that's not managed centrally. But over here, this is actually linked to this taxonomy, this managed metadata. So someone in the governance department has very carefully thought through exactly how they want to organize all of these clothing categories in the company so that they can do things like reporting on them and other sorts of interesting roll-ups. Whatever thing the governance people think is important, they were able to express through here. And then me as a user, I'm just able to pick the thing that's most relevant and say, yeah, this really is about men's pants. It's useful for me because I see it here in my library. I'm able to do things like I can filter by it so that later on as this thing fills out, I'm able to quickly find the documents that are most relevant. So again, it's that perfect marriage between some governance folks building the right things on their end and it coming naturally to me here in my end. The last thing I want to show just in the creation and working with documents is our integration with Office. So I have a document, had a document opened up here. This is something that we at Microsoft take very seriously as sort of part of our DNA, which is great integration between all these separate components so that it works together in one seamless way. So here's an example of some of the things we showed off earlier in the conference that are coming into Word and PowerPoint. Both of these, I think, are actually available if you're on the Office Insider Fast Track. That's the bits that I'm running here. So you should be able to see these things. So here's a document that's stored in my SharePoint site. And when I want to do work in collaboration with it, I don't actually have to leave Word. We brought all the capabilities directly into Word here. So for example, I can see who the document is shared with. In this case, it's both the owner of the Tahoe project as well as the members. And then because it's a public group, this thing is shared more broadly. But if I want to share it out, we have this new thing called links that just work. So in the old days of SharePoint, when you wanted to share something, you'd get a direct URL to the document, and you'd email it, and maybe the person had access to the document, maybe not, and maybe you had access request turns on, maybe not. We wanted to make things a little bit easier. So we've actually built these new kinds of links that we just call a sharing link. You can see I can click here directly inside of Office, and I can either create a link that allows anyone who receives it to edit the document or to do view only. And so when you click one of these things, it goes off to the back end. It creates a link. I can copy that, and now I can send that an email. And the nice thing about it is it precisely follows email semantics. When you send an email to someone, what your expectation is that person can read it, not anyone else. But if that person forwards it, then the person they forward it to can read it. And if that person forwards it on to an entire company, large group, everyone in the company can read it. I think we all kind of get that's how email access semantics work. The link behaves exactly the same way. This is a link you can put into an email. It doesn't make it discoverable. It doesn't make it show up in Search or in Delve. But the person who gets the email can read the document. And if that person forwards the email, they can read the document also. So we're excited to bring those capabilities directly into Office to help people take their content through its sort of first mile right. life cycle, as Chris was talking about. The other thing we brought in is the integrated activity view. So back over here, we have, this is going to be pretty boring activity, but we can show you the activity that's happening on a particular document. We surface that same sort of content right here in Office, including the ability to roll back to a previous version. So if you want to see what was happening when that person edited there, you can click right there. So we think making it easy to create the right kind of content, whether it's from your phone, through Office Lens, whether it's through a document type, a content type and a document template, and then actually getting to work, sharing, collaborating with people, we wanted to make that super easy.
Thanks. One of the points I just wanted to reiterate there, we even took the slide out because if you've been working in SharePoint for more than a minute, you know that a SharePoint document library offers versioning and approvals. We see them as such fundamental table stakes that we barely ever mention that they're out there, but they are intrinsic to the way that we want to manage collaborative content, especially as we're in a kind of a rich multi-edit environment, because if I now are allowing multiple people to edit my content in real time, it's really important that I've set down the substrate that lets me understand the version history of all that.
Yeah, and of course, we didn't talk about a bunch of other things in Team Sites. I have another session tomorrow morning if you want to look just at the productivity areas. We didn't talk about news, which is a way both to publish interesting information in the local team site, but also aggregate up company-wide to find the most interesting activities. We didn't talk about sync. We're very, very excited that we now have a highly reliable sync mechanism for all these team site files. So lots and lots of stuff we're doing to make it easy to work with these documents.
Thank you. So next, when we talk about the process of coordinating activities of multiple people, if I am going to manage that content into the next part of its life cycle, these we see as kind of the principal things to understand that are available to help make sure my information is properly coordinated. First and foremost, how do we organize information in libraries? Document libraries are the principal landing place inside of SharePoint and OneDrive for all the content we have out there. We see kind of two ways that that formal structuring process works. The classic way that IT or information architects work with is with things like content type and custom taxonomy. But it's also important to understand it's people-centric. So when we modernized document libraries, we did that to demystify the process of letting users add columns to a document library, change views, pin things, being able to create a richer experience to let people zero in on precisely the right content. We're also really pumped about what we're doing with Flow and with Power Apps for the ability to be able to tie in orchestration around our documents as well as other information inside SharePoint in a way that we haven't been able to do in the cloud as easily before. And then we won't delve deeply into it, lowercase d, but for group conversations and calendar, those are constructs that live closely coupled to content that lives inside SharePoint and OneDrive. Why is that important? Well, when I add information to a group conversation or calendar, I can intrinsically point to that instead of leading to information proliferation as I move around. So for managing content, probably the most powerful tool that's out there is SharePoint Managed Metadata. I'm going to hop off the stage because I just feel like walking. In the 1940s, Claude Shannon was a mathematician at MIT who did some of the first fundamental research on signal-to-noise ratio. During the Second World War, it was one of the first times we had planes at high altitude at great distance communicating over radio. And as the planes got further away, the instinct was to just turn the volume up. And they rapidly discovered that when you amplify an undifferentiated signal, when you turn up the volume, you also turn up the noise. Now, we've brought together many tools to help zero in with more precision on big data problems. SharePoint and Office 365 are definitely participants in the big data explosion because it allows me to assemble large pools of unstructured content. We also have tooling that helps us zero in on it. Delve is definitely a piece of that, but SharePoint Managed Metadata allows me, as we just illustrated before, to define precise classifications so that I can find content, use it, and manage it throughout a life cycle. We can supply synonyms into those architectures. The taxonomy is very important because it allows me to get to something that's precise. If I am solely based on full-text searching, and I'm looking for documents that relate to marketing, I may have to remember to think of all the ways people might spell or abbreviate it. MKTG, advertising, so on and so forth, as opposed to guiding people, in the case here, to a single correct preferred term. The other thing that we're really excited to be able to share with you this week is support for hybrid taxonomy. We know there are many large pools of content that live on premises. We also have managed metadata in the cloud. And with Feature Pack 1, we begin the process of stitching them ever more closely together. In Feature Pack 1, you can define a central cloud-based store for your information and then choose to synchronize those term sets to your on-premises site collection. The process for that, first I want to make sure it is solely focused on the taxonomy. You're not dealing with federating content types between on-premises and cloud yet. But it is a very simple thing to set up. It does not require an advanced degree in PowerShell or Visual Studio. It's a wizard inside the hybrid section of SharePoint Online Administration that walks you through the process of setting that up. All you have to do is open the wizard and click the next button, and it will instantiate the correct timer jobs for you and tunnels for the communication for that. The landing place for all these capabilities is the Modern Document Library, which we've been rolling out this year. We're very pleased, you know, to have completed the rollout. Some of the highlights there are being able to present a thumbnail, modern, visually rich environment, because users don't just look at static blue lists of document names, but sometimes they take a cue from the visual reminders of what's in the document. We think that's important to help kind of create a beautiful content management experience, as well as it allowed us to bring that contextual information panel, which we looked at before in metadata. We're going to look at later on when we look at file classification. But it provides a surface where I can get to the properties of a document directly from the home page instead of having to click two levels down into a properties page, at which point I fill something else out, then okay, back. The more clicks we have, we know the harder it is for users to stay in syntax, in sync with us. And then finally, direct inline move copy gestures, as Jeremy showed you, allowing you to take a document that begins in OneDrive and copy it and publish it over into a SharePoint document library when it's time to open that up to a larger pool of users. The document upload process in a library supports drag and drop. So you can grab whole folders as well as single files, as well as support for not just creating new documents, but intelligently linking out to existing ones. If you've seen Outlook Modern Attachments, we're very familiar with that, and we have very similar tooling using the power of Microsoft Graph, being able to look at what content you've worked at most recently. I know, Jeremy, you were talking about how, you know, all the days of I find a document, I cut something, I open it up, I paste it, or I want to share a link. It's tedious. We already know what's going on, what I've been working with most recently. Why not just show me intelligently, these are the files you've been working with, so if I want to add a link live to the document library, the user experience is directly, it looks like a document, I see a thumbnail, but it's a pointer to the place where it actually lives. And then most importantly, that metadata can be edited directly in line in the information panel. The last point I want to make, something that we are going to be talking about, we want to make sure folks understand, is that Flow, which is an integration into SharePoint Online and to on-premises through our Gateway connector in preview right now, is able to work with documents in many repositories, including OneDrive and SharePoint. I'm not going to walk you through this example, and Jeremy's going to walk you through a slightly different example in the demo, but this example is showing you, in case you haven't seen it, all of the complex code you have to write to tell Flow to watch my email for a document with an attachment and copy the attachment into a preferred document library. All we have to do is say, watch my inbox, and if you see something with an attachment, set a condition, and then being able to pick it up and have a preferred place to drop it off. So if you need people to be able to email documents to a given mailbox, strip the attachments off, to bring something in, again, making sure that we are managing the creation and coordination of how information flows into SharePoint. If you were playing with this at home, the quick tip I want to give you is, if you can't see it in the back of the room, this show advanced options, you have to open that up. One of my colleagues who's in the room, who shall remain nameless, pointed out to me that in there it says, that's where you see, like, see that attachments are true and how many attachments should I pick up. But it's pretty easy to set up. Even I can do it, but of course I'm going to turn over to my expert colleague, Jeremy, to walk us through a more advanced demo.
I don't know if it's more advanced, but it's my demo anyway, so it'll be better. So let's just look again a little bit about this idea of how people in the natural course of doing teamwork together want to build up their own organization, coordinate their work together in a way that can actually accrue value to many of these things. So let's start back in this library we were looking at before. And let's say we need to add another column here to keep track of the state of these documents. These are strategy documents. You want to know if they're in a draft state or if they're in a final state. Again, in the past, you would have had to sort of delve off into, lowercase d. We've got to be careful with that word.
I know.
You would have had to fall off into the cliff of site settings and library settings where people are unhappy. So we've just brought it right here. So I'm going to go ahead and click plus. I'm going to go ahead and create, why don't we do a person field for this one and say, let's see who it's assigned to. So we'll do person, and we'll say that it's assigned to for a review process. It's going to go ahead and create that column. Okay. So we've got that there
right away.
You wrote
that like a variable. I love that.
Oh, I did. Pascal casing. Sorry. Yes. Old habits. Old habits die very hard. Let's get rid of that grouping. And so let's go ahead. Whoop. Are we going to get rid of it? Well, we'll change grouping in a second. Let's go ahead and just sort of bootstrap things by getting one of these documents assigned. So we'll go over here. And we will. Uh-oh. Where's my assigned to, Chris?
Make a change, save it, and open it up again.
There we go. Okay, so let's assign that over to Chris. Come back here. Oh, I didn't save my view. Sorry. So this is important. We make it really easy to modify views, but we don't want to auto-save them because as people are experimenting with views, you don't want to sort of pollute things. So I forgot to save on the way out. What a great demo opportunity. How easy is it to add a column back into the view? Check this out. We're going to go to column settings. We're going to say show hide columns. And we're going to say, please bring back my assigned to. OK. Whew. That's better. Now I'm going to save my view. So we don't have that problem again. We're just going to save this one back to all documents. You could create multiple views that fall off there. And let's go ahead and group by assigned to. It's not terribly interesting right now because most are unassigned. But as you saw, hopefully in some of the keynote demos, we're making it easier and easier to do these kinds of metadata things. So if this document over here should be going to Chris, we'll just take it. Whoop, hang on a sec. We'll take it and we'll put it over here. And it's going to magically assign it back to Chris. So there it is. You can imagine.
And if you wanted to, you could assign all the documents to me.
I could do them all in
one.
Bulk. That's right.
Okay. Please don't.
He has enough work to do as it is.
Yep.
So we'll save him the effort there. Another thing that we're working on to make it easy to organize documents is this notion of pinning the most important documents to the top. Do we want to take questions at the end?
Can you zoom in? It's very difficult to see.
Yes, I can zoom in. I don't know if that's actually helpful. So we've got a bunch of documents up here that are unassigned. And then the way I did that assignment was I just clicked on one of these guys. Sorry, Chris, more work coming your way. We're going to do that and just drop it down. And you can see that it tells me what it's going to do. It's going to assign it to Chris, and I put it in there. It's going to think about it briefly, and then it adds it down to that assigned bucket. So it's moved it from unassigned over to Chris. And the other thing I was showing before was just the menus here. So off the assigned to, this is where I did the grouping. Whoop, let's try to get this to behave just right. This is where I did the grouping, and then column settings is where I went. Sorry, this doesn't want to behave very well at the zoom level. Nope, sorry, apparently I can't do that zoomed in. But that's where the other settings were for creating new columns, for doing that show hide panel. To control what was going in there. So sorry about that for making that harder to see. Let's do another thing to make it easier to keep track of documents. Let's say that within this library, imagine there are hundreds of documents, and we want to really highlight the one that's sort of the getting started document, the thing everybody has to read. We have this new notion of pinning a document. So I'm going to select one of these guys. And then I'm going to click pin to top. And it pins the document. Oh, I picked one that has absolutely no content, so sorry, that's not a very beautiful pin. Let's pick one more that actually has something interesting. And we can pin that one to the top. Maybe that one's up. There we go.
Oh, there we go. Woo!
Okay. And let's actually unpin this one because I think it's not very interesting. So I'm just going to click on him. We'll do edit, pin, and we'll unpin. So here I'm adding a signal. It's just sort of keeping track of a little bit of extra metadata on that document that says, oh, this is a pinned document. It's not an infinite list. We give you, I think, 3 to 5 you can pin up there. But it's a nice way to sort of bring people's attention to what matters. And it'll also, over time, start to be a signal to other systems that say, these are some important documents here in this library. And then just the last thing, of course, all these columns you can filter on, right? So here we have our, again, that taxonomy column where we were trying to keep track of the different clothing categories for our clothes. You could easily just go over here. You can choose filter by. It gives me the list of valid values just in here, and I could say only show me the documents that are related to men's pants. So again, very easily changing our view. I could click save again if I wanted to make this a view that everyone else sees. But all right here, we never had to go out to a single setting page, which is something we're pretty excited about. Can we hold the questions to the end? That's all right, we'll make sure we catch them all. Let me show you another folder where I've done some interesting stuff around this kind of coordinating documents together. And this is where we're going to talk about flow. So this is a different library that I've created. And this is a place where I wanted to have a little bit more sort of insight and governance over what's showing up on the site. These are documents that are internal only. And so maybe I have some special processes that go with them. Maybe we'll talk about sort of retention tags that would go with them. We'll cover that in a later part of the demo. But because there's that extra, actually there's a couple of things happening. All the content in this library is protected by information rights management. We'll see what that does later on. But I also, because I know that each document here ends up creating a little bit extra work in the system, people have to think about it, I, as the owner of this library, want to be careful to make sure the documents that go in here really are deserving of this classification. I don't want people just spamming this library and ending up filling up all of our compliance and record systems with things that don't really need to be treated in that way. So what we've done is we've built a flow, and let me just, I'm going to kick a document upload off while we look at the flow, and hopefully by the time I'm done, we will have seen the email. So here is a document whose title I'm certain you can't read, but it says Holiday Party Plan. So something that's not a very critical document, doesn't probably need a bunch of retention, and somebody foolishly is going to upload this over here. Of course, we have drag and drop uploads.
Did you say foolishly? Shouldn't I be the one doing that then?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you for taking that one.
Okay.
I appreciate it. All right, so that document's up there. And what I've done is I've added to this document library a very simple flow using our new Microsoft Flow tool, which I'm really excited about. And this is really it here. When a file is created, send approval mail. So there's a little bit more behind it. You can bounce into this thing, and you can see that I specified the site URL and the folder under which I want to run this flow. And I did a little bit of customization on the approval email. I decided to send all the approvals to myself, since I'm the person who's overseeing this thing. The subject is going to be compliance review, and then it'll have the name of the file that came from SharePoint in this earlier step up here. And then the options that'll come in that mail are, hey, is that thing, you know, compliant with the internal only tag, or is it non-compliant? For simplicity, I didn't take any actions on that. But what you would just do next is you would add a new step here. New step, and then you could add a condition that said, hey, if it's internal compliant, you can do this. If it's non-compliant, you can move the document to a different library or something like that. Okay, so hopefully while we've been talking, that flow has been running, and if everything goes well, there should be an email waiting in my inbox. Let's see, this is from an earlier one that I did. So I guess this flow is still cooking, but here's an example of what it would look like. So we've got compliance review. We've got the title of the document that's in there, and there's a quick choice that you can make right here in email. You don't have to go off to any other system. So that's a super lightweight example of the kinds of things you can do with Flow. Chris was showing a different example of flowing documents from email into SharePoint. That's another great example. There's lots and lots of connectors. We're really excited about this technology. It's still in preview, but it's available to go and take a look at, and we expect to bring that to general availability pretty soon there. The last thing I want to talk about in terms of how teams work together and coordinate is the rest of the things that come in an Office 365 group, and in particular the conversation and the calendar. So we've talked a lot at this conference about the change we're making so that every Office 365 group is going to come with a fully powered SharePoint team site, and we're going to do a bunch of work that will come out in the coming months so that when you create a team site in SharePoint, that actually has a group that's behind it. So there's a shared object in the common directory that describes the owners, the members of that group, some of the policies around that group, and then each of the Office 365 workloads can create the appropriate resources that belong to that group. So in this case, I don't just have a site here, but I can click on this thing and I can see, oh, look, I've got conversations, I've got a calendar. So I can go over, where was the one I already had it queued up? So this is my personal mail, that's my inbox over there, but down here are all the sites and groups that I'm a member of. Who doesn't want to Zoom for me? Okay, well, you have to trust me that these are the different sites I'm a member of, so I can go to Project Tahoe. And here's a place, when I created that group through SharePoint, it also created a distribution list, a place where everyone in the group can communicate together. So I'm able to send mail to Project Tahoe at Contoso, and all of those mails, in addition to optionally arriving in people's individual inboxes, also arrive in this shared group mailbox. So it's archived there. It's available. When someone else joins the group, they can see all the conversations. They can see what's going on there. We likewise have a shared calendar. This one, I think, is probably pretty boring. But you can put shared events in here. We use this on our own team for our Ignite preparation site. We put in the shared calendar all of our OneDrive and SharePoint sessions. So there's like 60-some-odd sessions. We don't want them all in our personal calendars, especially because in a couple time slots, we have like 4 sessions that all overlap. So your personal calendar would be a mess, but they're all on the group calendar. And then you have an option as a member of the group to go to any one of those things and say, yes, please add this one to my personal calendar. So a really great way to help teams work together, not just with documents, but with other parts of the collaboration and communication process. And then the last thing I will show here is some of the integration we've done. Chris talked a little bit about this new approach to attachments. So what I'm going to do is go over here, and let's say I want to discuss this document with people who are in my group, I want to have something to say. Well, we're going to do exactly what I did before, which is we're just going to get a link. And again, I can do this from within PowerPoint. I can do it here. I'm going to copy that over to the clipboard. And I'm going to go over to my mail. And let's start creating a new group mail here, new conversation. And I apologize if this is going to be too small to see exactly. But up here in teeny, teeny font, it says to Project Tahoe. So it's sending it to that group DL. I can say, hey, everyone, I updated this important doc. Have a look. I'm going to paste that in. And if the demo gods are with me, we actually go ahead and the integration between the mail workload and the document workload, it's able to look at that link. It figures out what it is. It gets the smartest preview, and it puts it right there in the email. So when people receive it, they get a little bit of extra hint about what this document is and not just a sort of long gobbledygook link there. That's a little bit of the work that we're doing in working across Office 365 groups to help people collaborate and coordinate better.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeremy. So for Act 3, what we really want to talk through is, you know, content's been born and we've managed it through a coordinated process. What steps do we have to protect the content throughout its life cycle? And for us, in similar fashion, there are four major constructs that we think are important to make sure we're looking at. First and foremost, when you're on Office 365, is our commitment to platform security. I was part of a session earlier this morning where we talked about everything that we are doing in security, privacy, and compliance for SharePoint and OneDrive, and I'd refer you to the recordings there. We won't go deeply on it, but being able to bring a rich arsenal of those tools, what we do, as well as support for the security tools that you can bring to bear around things like DLP and data retention. We have a long history of an investment in things in information lifecycle management, in records management, in e-discovery. We think those are very important investments to harvest and make sure we're carrying forward into the second decade and beyond of ECM on SharePoint. So we'll take a look at what some of those are. First and foremost, when we think about security in Office 365 for SharePoint and OneDrive, these are the core pillars that we think about. We think that first and foremost, there shouldn't be any ability to roll information out. This is going to auto-advance on me again. I borrowed this from another presentation, and it was doing this before.
Didn't beta test it.
Didn't beta test that. Which might, maybe the gods are giving me a hint that we might be running over on time, so I will push on, but just say I will direct most of you to blogs.office.com, where yesterday we published a new blog post linking out to our brand new white paper summarizing everything that we are doing for platform content and endpoint security, along with what we're doing for privacy and compliance in Office 365 for all of this. When we think about records management, we have and continue to support for on-premises as well as in the cloud two classic modes for managing records where it allow me to either ship content off to a master record center or declare something to be a record in place. When I flag something as a record, two things happen. First, it gets marked as read-only. And second, it becomes subject to alternate retention policies. So in a content type, I can say that a contract should be saved for 5 years unless it's a record, in which case I want to save it for 10. That idea of information lifecycle management is intrinsic to SharePoint, and this is one of the capabilities we're talking about today that is equally applicable to on-premises users as well as people on Office 365. It is a no-code way that I can orchestrate content management throughout a life cycle. It is all time-based. It's typically based on when the document was created or modified, and I can look for days or months or years and be able to say, after a certain period of time, I want you to declare it to be a record or clean up drafts or purge the document or so forth. It is, again, a no-code solution that's available to you. You can define it on content types or for libraries and folders. But we recognize that content retention in SharePoint isn't necessarily a complete story because you have content that is important to manage that lives in places like Exchange and in places like Skype. And we want to give you a fundamental way of being able to define standards for how long information should be retained across all of those. I will show this to you in demo shortly, but just to give you a quick walkthrough, and for those of you just taking the slides home and sharing it with someone, inside the Security and Compliance Center, you can now create what are called retention tags. And a retention tag is a handle that I can surface in any of the Office 365 constructs I've mentioned, where I can say this class of document should be kept for at least 5 years, and specify whether at the end of that period it should be automatically deleted or just be deletable. I can choose where that policy should be applied. Is it just for Exchange? Is it for OneDrive, SharePoint, Groups, Skype, et cetera? And then finally, on the consumption side, I've grabbed OneDrive here for this example. That surfaces as yet another bit of metadata that I can use in an end user scenario to automatically surface to that user rules. Here I'm saying for this document demo text, I have the option of saying this is a temporary document. You should automatically purge it after 30 days, et cetera, et cetera. The other related concept there about purging information is the idea of e-discovery and legal hold. We talked about this in the session this morning as well. Back when I was in college and my parents were two attorneys and it was easy to get a summer job, you could spend an awful lot of time just getting a job as a litigation assistant, wading through bankers' boxes after bankers' boxes of copies of this, looking for that. And the more information is proliferated and become electronic, e-discovery has become an even bigger challenge to most organizations. How do I find and sift information to respond to some sort of legal investigation, whether it's a lawsuit or some sort of administrative inquiry? And we're able to use the power of Azure sitting in the processing engines behind Office 365 to let you encapsulate searches for content. For example, if we are worried about divesting our investment in Fabricam, we can create a case in eDiscovery to allow us to find that content and hand it over to a compliance specialist. It doesn't require IT, and in fact, in most organizations, you want to federate those kind of compliance controls away from IT to someone who has that direct, specific responsibility. Yet another important concept throughout the life cycle of a document is DLP, for data loss prevention. Being able to say, once I've classified information across Office 365, I want to create a standard set of rules saying that this kind of content, based on its sensitivity, is subject to different controls. What are some of those controls? Well, for example, as we'll take a look at here momentarily, a document may have financial information in it. And if it has financial information in it, we consider it sensitive. And I could go to one extreme and encrypt the document. But I also might just limit how that document can be used and where, and be able to tell users, you can view this. Maybe you can even edit it here directly inside of the client, but you can't copy it, or you can't redistribute it, or share it, or email it to people outside of the company. Going back to what we said almost an hour ago about the balance with usability and with governance and security that makes up governance. We also allow you to surface this as policy tips, because sometimes just providing a clue to the user that what they're about to do might not be what's intended can be a really useful way to help shape that usage. Based on your culture of information, sometimes it's far more relevant to tell someone, hey, you're about to ship a file full of credit cards outside of the company. Just telling you. And based on someone's role, sometimes that actually is okay. It's hard to anticipate all of the usage scenarios where someone in finance might need to share a file with someone in a payroll processing organization. But again, helping surface that information ensures the accuracy of what we're doing to protect information throughout its life cycle. Here I'm showing you an example of a policy tip that is able to be surfaced inside of SharePoint and OneDrive. One of the things that we're also really happy about is all of those capabilities for DLP, as well as what we're doing with encryption, is something that we've extended throughout multiple endpoints. So it's not solely limited to what you can see in the browser, but also what you can get to in the Office-rich clients, as well as our mobile clients for OneDrive and SharePoint. Okay. And as we look at that, we have to just touch base. This is just a mere sampling. There is a large number of partners who work as part of our ecosystem. We're thrilled to have many of them, many of whom are also accomplishing things that go beyond the capabilities that we have here. Many of them are exhibiting here. And I encourage you, if you have a scenario that you're exploring with us that you need to augment, please avail yourselves of one of the partners. We provide an awful lot of guidance to them as they work through their solutions, hopefully in partnership with us, to help bring you towards where you need to be. So that said, it's time for the demo, and I want to remember which part do we start with? Start with you.
Yeah, number 5, please. Okay. All right, in the interest of time, I'll make this fairly quick and just show off live demos of the things that Chris talked about. So we're going to open the OneDrive app. Here's a list of all the files that are in my OneDrive. Of course, as we mentioned before, we were really working on making sharing super easy. So you can go to any file in SharePoint. You can simply click the Share button. And wait a minute. We actually got one of these policy conflicts. So if you look, it's probably impossible to see again on the small screen. But just to the right of the 493 KB, there's a little indicator that says, hey, DLP has noticed something about this file. And because DLP has noticed something, it's actually going to tell us that there's a potential policy conflict here. So we'll go ahead and say OK. And you can look in, and it'll say, gosh, this item potentially conflicts with the policy. In this case, we actually turned on a policy that said documents with any social security numbers, US social security numbers, cannot be shared broadly. And so it was once the document had a social security number added, it ran through the DLP scanner, it matched, it tagged it as a potentially non-compliant document. But one of the nice things is that we really try to empower users, again, this notion of democratization of ECM. In the old days, again, if you get a thing that says, you can't do this, and this is the thing you need to get your job done, you'll find another way. We've all done it. If it says, gosh, you can't push the share button in SharePoint, I'll put it on a USB stick, or I'll send it an email, or I'll find some other way to do it.
Take a picture of the screen. Yeah. Text it to someone.
In the worst case. So right here built in, you know, we tell you at the top what exactly the policy is and what's going on, but we let you make a decision to override so that you can get on with your job, you can get the thing done, but the right information flows back to the governance office. They can understand what was going on with that file, why you chose to do that, all right there in the mobile app. So we're super excited about that. I'm going to show rights management very quickly here. So let's switch over to that library I talked about before, the internal-only library. I'm going to take advantage of the OneDrive's app ability to see all of my sites. We'll go into Project Tahoe. We'll go into internal-only documents. So again, because these I've set up this folder with IRM information rights management turned on, they're each encrypted when they come down, as well as having a little message to the user to help them understand what the policy is. So when I open one of these guys, like the Fabricam contract, that seems like a pretty important thing, it opens in Word. I have full access to it because I'm a member of the group, but we've built in directly into Word on every endpoint, iPhone, Android, desktop, the web apps, just a little reminder here that says, hey, this thing is internal only, so you have to be extra thoughtful about the way you use that. Again, that's a thing that we think is a unique value proposition that we as Microsoft can bring by having the entire content creation, coordination, and sharing tool set all together. Let's look at one last thing over here on number 8, please. We're going to look at those retention tags that Chris talked about. And this is, again, you know, for me, exactly that intersection of user productivity with IT compliance. So it's actually a useful thing. In this organization, we've defined a bunch of these tags that govern which data should be kept for a long time, which data should absolutely not be kept for a long time. I've met with several organizations who said, how can I ensure that all my documents vanish after 3 months unless they're legally required to be longer? If that's the kind of organization you have, we can support that also. And what we've done is the compliance officer has gone through and defined a bunch of classifications, and we treat it as just another column on this document. So I can go in here. I've got a list of classifications. Let's see if this works in a zoomed view. There they are. So I can see the different things that have been defined here. I can pick one of these things. And again, this is useful not just for the compliance officer, but also for me as I organize my library. We talked about metadata being a useful thing, so I can actually keep track of which of my competitive research versus which of my pricing documents. That's all it takes to declare this thing as a potentially managed piece of content. All the right rules will kick in. But to me as a user, it's just a productive thing here. So I can go and I can actually add the column. I'm going to show the column protection tag. Mm-hmm. And then those tags show up. And of course, I can do things like filter down by them so I can actually see the documents that are really the most important to me. So again, combination of IT governance and user productivity built right in together.
And so the last point I wanted to make on this, jumping over to my demo environment here again on the Tahoe site, if I go into the Security and Compliance Center, that key information is structured using under the classification section here under labels. So if I drill into labels, you know, this session has expired. Please log in and try again. Again, it's a clue that we're probably talking too long, but so here I see a list of some of the classifications that are, in my organization, competitive research, legal documents, marketing, and so forth. So let's create a tag to match the use case that Jeremy was just talking about with the customer. So let's create a tag for temporary documents. My mastery of numbers on this is fantastic. Spelling is, you know, is math's tricky pal. So, and say purge in 30 days, which is a fairly aggressive regime, but we can say preserve the content for this long. Say I want to keep it for 30 days. Or we can say don't even preserve it, so let people delete it early. Again, just delete anything older than 30 days. I just want to comment on one thing, because I've been covering this topic in SharePoint for a good number of years. And when we first started talking about setting up these kind of long-term information management policies on SharePoint 2007, I remember talking about setting up a 20-year retention on SharePoint 2007. And we knew full well that SharePoint 2007 would probably be out of support by the year 2027. So it was predicated on the idea that you did all of the correct marshaling of content and preservation of all of those rules. And if you do all of those things, yes, you can preserve the integrity of those rule sets. But with Office 365, because it's an evergreen service, if I set up a five-year retention plan, you're still going to be on that same platform in 5 years, 10 years. And it gives much more credibility to setting up these long-term policies. But here I'm setting up something that is short-term for just 30 days, create the tag. Again, no PowerShell was harmed in the creation of this tag. It takes a few seconds to save, but once that's out there, it is available to my site collections and, in fact, anywhere else in Office 365 that I'm using that construct. Okay. So as we kind of bring it around to the home stretch, we kind of wanted to leave, before we break for Q&A, we wanted to leave you with some of our thoughts and some of the best practices that are out there. So in no particular order, but some of the things that we know as we kind of look at where we see ECM heading for the next year or two with some of the stuff that we're working on. One of the things that we want to encourage you to think about is minimize the level of ECM that you do in the default content library. So when the messaging about group gets a team site gets a group is very much coming. And if you've watched the disclosures, when you set up a Yammer group, you're going to be able to get a team site sitting behind it with a document library. However, if you build into that default document library a lot of structured metadata with a lot of processing and a lot of mandatory fields, users coming to that content from one of those other places may see some unanticipated results. So the better practice is if I am going to do that kind of orchestration, let the default document library be the default document library, but build something else, as we were doing with the strategy documents or the internal documents, for those more sophisticated capabilities. Second, for purposes of demo on the fly, we do structure an awful lot of things here just as library or list level columns, but it is by far a better practice to encapsulate all of those capabilities in site columns that I'm going to attach to a content type. Much better reuse and consistency of reuse throughout the content type ecosystem if I put them in a site columns. Third, big one. Please do not overwrite the default content types that you get with SharePoint. You may be very tempted because every document library has a content type in it called document to attach your metadata there. However, that's really not a good practice. If you want to create a Contoso, a Fabricam, a Hurricane, whatever your corporate or organizational identity is, a specialized contract, you can inherit those content types from document, and that way you have your own content type, and in a future update, if someone needs to do something to that default type, your updates won't be stepped upon. Another thing to be aware of is if you are looking towards hybrid managed metadata, we've got some detailed guidance as to the best ways to prepare for the implementation of hybrid managed metadata. To summarize it quickly, if you have a very intricate term source structure on premises, you may need to think about minimizing the use of some of the complex internal copying, term reuse, and pinning capabilities that we give you, because you are going to be mastering those terms in the future inside of the cloud and then resubscribing down to on-premises. So a bit of guidance, if you were about to launch on a complex geographic term process for on-premises that involves a lot of term reuse, you might want to wait until you have those mastered in the cloud. And then finally, be strategic in your use of content type hubs. And this is true whether you are on-premises or in the cloud. I once met an organization that was trying to use over 1,400 content types in every document library. And then when content type hubs came along, they said, great, now I can break out to 10 site collections and put the same 1,400 content types and synchronize them all over the place. It is too many for the casual mind to absorb that level of content types. Be strategic and judicious. Your contract, your presentation, the major groupings are out there. The 1,400 content types, I'll tell you the story before we break. It began with a summer intern who opened a former attorney's filing cabinet, wrote down all of the file folder names in it, and that was the content type architecture. Regardless if there was ever a document in any of the file folders. So, you know, Bob's old presentations, Bob's new presentations, Bob's presentations from 2007, they were all out there. Again, you can create lots of content types, but for syndication and sharing, you want to be, those are the powerful tools. Probably a dozen or so is where you want to land.
And just to finish up on that, the other implication of all that syndication is performance. So we're doing a ton of work to make sure that when you create a site, it's there in 5 seconds or less. That is the target we aim for. We're not quite there yet, but we are far away from the minutes that it used to be, unless you have a lot of content types, because then we are copying all those content types down to the site, and it's cranking a bunch of time out of the system. So that's another place where if you go overboard on the governance, you actually push your users away, because instead of creating a site and using it, they create a site, they wait for 3 minutes, and they give up, and they do something else.
So we thank you all for staying here. We know you're ECM diehards. We know that the open bar started at 5 o'clock, but we will answer the questions as quickly. We have a few minutes here. We are recording, so I'm going to ask, if you can get to the microphone, great. If not, we'll stop and repeat the question. So
okay,
thank you.
Thanks.
Yes.
So very good presentation and a lot of cool features. So you know, kudos to you guys. One question, the library Contoso docs was the content type associated with the library. When you added a column to it, did we just customize that content type? Like, you know, if I'm going to update that content type at a later date, you know, will it still reflect the change to that library?
Yeah, so there were actually two different things going on, though. There was the content type, which is the set of columns on the document, and that is mastered in one place. If you change the content type in the future, that goes down to all documents. And then there was the view, and the way it works right now is you have to manually update the view to show the columns that you want, and that is unrelated to content type changes. That's a view that's unique to that library.
But when you added a column to the library, or was it just a...
Okay.
Yes. In the second part of that, when I just clicked plus and chose assign to, that was not a content type. That was a unique library column.
So the default behavior, it's a longer demo, so for time we didn't do it, but the better practice is I have a master content type that lives at the root of the site collection. I attach a site column with taxonomy or any of the other field types to it. That then gets used in lots of site-based document libraries. I then add the third field at the master level, and that field will automatically be added to the library. Adding it to the view is a separate story, but it will be there and available for consumption. Great question. Thank you.
Hey, so we've been holding off on using groups because we use a lot of the content management features. Do I understand correctly that with the new modern team sites and groups, we'll be able to place those within site collections where we want them and then be able to use all like the site columns, site collection columns, content types, all that kind of stuff.
Yes, precisely so. And we get a little caught up when we say new modern team site. I want to be super clear. This is capability we're bringing to every existing group, whether you create it tomorrow or you created it a year ago. Under the covers, we always had a site collection there. We had a point of view that said we should really simplify and hide a bunch of that functionality. We've heard your feedback. We've changed our point of view. So it's already out there in first release. Every person who's had this thing roll out, all your groups just wake up and you get the full site capabilities there.
Okay, and just one other quick one. With managed metadata columns, we run into a lot of issues with workflows and things like that. There's limitations of that. Do you know if using the Power Apps and Flow and these things, you will be able to use those managed metadata term sets?
Not yet, to be candid. So we support most column types through. There's a technology called the connector, which is the extension that lets you work with Power Apps and Flow. We don't do any kind of multi-choice through those connectors yet. And managed metadata, I'm trying to remember, they might be read-only, and we're still trying to get the edit. So we're committed to get it right. You might not see it working right now, but we'll keep cranking.
Thank you so much. Great presentation.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Hi. Trying to wrap my head around the sharing links. So if I'm an end user who doesn't have access to edit the permissions for the library that I'm on, and I want to send it to somebody who is outside of that group, who has access to those documents, how does that work for me?
So all of that link stuff is based on having the manage permission.
Okay.
We do have this new feature called members can share, relatively new, so that people who are not owners have that capability. But if you don't have that capability, if someone else has created the link, we'll reuse it for you, but you cannot yourself establish one of those links.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep.
So the groups now, you can do differentiated permissions across the members of the group, so you could have folders with more sensitive information and have some of the members have access to that and other ones not?
Yeah, so it was really important to us. We had epic numbers of debates about this internally because the goal for groups is to just say, look, everyone in the group can access all the content on the site. It's a very, very easy thing to explain in people's heads. Get a little confused when you say, well, the group gets a site, but not everyone in the group can see everything in the site. But candidly, the alternative is to say the group gets a site and you can't use it because you want to change one folder. So you better create a second site for the group. And now the group has two sites, which seemed even worse. So the functionality's there. We certainly encourage a pattern in which things are broadly available to the group. But if you look under the covers, the SharePoint tech is there.
And the 25 terabyte limit on SharePoint Online site collections, how do you get your limit increased?
Get the limit increased?
Yeah.
There is capacity and there's licensing. Mm-hmm. So I want to be clear, we are not, especially
quota,
based on the way the quotas work, you're not automatically get to 25 terabytes if you're not licensed for it.
Right.
And that's a service request
to
get
that. So
right
now, our site collections tapped out at 1 terabyte.
Yep.
Online.
I think we just turned it on. Oh, no.
Think it's on. I would just encourage you. You should check inside SPO Admin, that lovely modern-looking screen at the beginning where you see site collections.
Right.
You should be able to see if you're seeing a limited capacity and you can't raise it there yourself. Please open a service request. But that shouldn't be what happens.
Okay, cool. Thanks.
I have a real quick question. I noticed in your presentation you were emailing to a list or library, and I'm having issues with that in SharePoint Online because you could only email to the actually site collection.
Yeah. So what Chris was proposing.
Yeah.
So that is a limitation of SharePoint Online that we know people have heard about. There's lots of reasons that I won't try to defend for why it doesn't work there. The proposal going forward is to actually use Flow. So you can create a very specific set of rules that say, when files are sent to this group, run this set of logic, move the file to the exact spot where it belongs.
So we have to put it one place to send it another to get an email that it occurred?
Help me understand that.
I made a batch file every night, and I wanted to put it in this list. And then I wanted an email to say, batch file loaded.
So I'd say that's more of a base collab feature, not an ECM feature. In those scenarios, I would say if you have a group site that has a distribution list on it, email to the distribution list, and that way you're getting it to the collaborative space where it needs to be. If you had a more different scenario, sure, you could use Flow to strip the attachment and move it somewhere else, but...
But, you know, we do not have the capability to say that there's an email address for a specific list. Like, that's something that is not supported in SharePoint Online.
It's not coming back, like it was in 2007.
I would love to figure out a way to make it work. We're going to finish off the set of stuff we've shown here, and then, you know, next year we'll take a look at what's next up.
Okay.
And one other question is, if you already have a team site, and instead of creating a new group and it creates a team site, can we retrofit that group back to a team site that already exists?
We are planning that work right now. I don't have a timeline for when it comes, but that's one of the next things we want to deliver.
Okay. Thank you.
We have time for one more question, and then we'll be around for a few questions here on the floor. So,
For the retention policies, can they be configured in a way so that they trigger off of external events? The reason I ask is we have an external line of business app that keeps track of relevant data that governs our retention policies.
So the answer for that is not yet, but it's very much one of the things that's under design and consideration for how it is addressable through code. There's also some partner solutions that cover that as well.
Yeah,
so
right now we have a homegrown app that does
it. Okay. Thank you very much.